KALW.
We say, well, we put the boulders there to keep people safe. The truth is we moved people before we had a solution.
Fremont has been using boulders to block parking near Tesla. Now RV residents who call the area home find themselves stuck between a rock and a hard place.
We're supposed to be gone by tomorrow. I'm guessing that I'm going to go farther up 880 and pick an exit and try someplace else.
We'll hear from residents as well as the city who says the area is unsafe. Then, some local singles are missing sex and intimacy during the shutdown.
I haven't had so much as a handshake in 3 weeks. That's been really hard for me because I'm somebody who thrives off of touch and affection.
That's coming up. I'm Hanat Baba, and this is Cross Currents. As cities and counties focus their attention on containing the spread of COVID-19, the Bay Area's homeless population continues to face the daily challenges of survival. In Fremont, a conflict between homeless residents, their supporters, and the city is playing out on a mile-long stretch of industrial road next to the 880 freeway, right on the doorstep of tech giants like Seagate and Tesla. The shoulder of Cato Road has become home to a large number of people living in RVs. Now the city's ordering them to leave and placing boulders in their place. In February, KLW's Christopher Agusa followed one resident as she grappled with her next move.
Lynn Shipman and her boyfriend live in their RV along Cato Road in Fremont. When I meet her, she immediately invites me in.
You want a snack?
I think I'm okay. I'm all right. It's pretty roomy in here. You got some space.
Yeah.
Inside, it looks like a mini botanical garden.
And I'm a plant lover, as you can tell. I just love them. They're beautiful. They make great air. And it keeps any building or house from smelling. Yeah. They're air plants. You get them at Home Depot, you just spray them with water every few days. They're cool.
Lynn is in her 40s. She's sharp and quick to laugh. She's called this area home for the past 3 months.
I thought it was been going pretty good. I mean, everybody minds their own business.
They're surrounded by other RVs, semi-trucks, and cars that stretch out in a long, haphazard line. A nearby chain-link fence is the only thing separating them from the traffic of 880. Across the street stands Tesla's corporate office building. Fremont's plan to move people out while moving boulders in, it comes as a big emotional blow. Only a few years ago, Lynn was living under a broken-down school bus.
And then we graduated to a broken-down taco truck, and then we bought our first camper, and then now we have this camper.
So once they made it out here, it felt like their hard work had paid off. Lynn got a job as a painter's assistant. She says they were finally starting to feel stable. Lynn and I step outside, and I ask her what she thinks about Fremont's new policy.
We only need... 22 feet? Good grief.
She says they haven't heard from the city directly.
That blinking sign right down the road, that's all we know. That's all we know.
Lynn's talking about an electronic traffic sign, which she says appeared about a week earlier. It's a giant, flashing reminder that their time is almost up.
We're supposed to be gone by tomorrow. I'm guessing that I'm going to go farther up 880 and pick an exit and try someplace else. But I'm waiting until the very last minute, as you've noticed.
Lynn offers to introduce me to some other folks who live along Cato Road. We walk to another RV with an oversized American flag hung from its side. A young guy in his 30s named Mike the Kid lives here. As we walk up, he's squatted over a white-colored board, applying paint with a rubber spatula. All around him are pieces of abstract art leaning up against the side of his RV.
What can you tell me about your art?
Love doing it. In my life, art is kind of just there for me.
As Mike and I talk, two employees from Abode Services, a homeless outreach organization, walk up and ask Mike how he's doing. They give him a bag of items before moving on to the next vehicle.
Socks, a little beef jerky in there.
Yeah, a little, I love socks. They should have put underwear in there, too.
Yeah, right.
And a toothbrush. No, I'm like, they didn't put this, didn't put that. Like, no.
I say goodbye to him and Lynn and let them know I'll follow up with them next week. Organizations like Abode, the one that stopped by Mike's RV, are working on building affordable housing, but most of those projects are years away. Then there are immediate services for people living on the street. But this group, people like Lynn and Mike, they don't really fall into either category. They're finding a way to make it work. What they're missing is a place to park. Fremont says parking there is a problem, though. And it doesn't have to do with people being homeless.
I wanted to address last week's event on Cato Road and the conditions that led to them.
That's Fremont Mayor Lily May at a city council meeting in mid-February. She says there are plenty of good reasons to stop people from parking and living there, like high-speed traffic on Cato Road and the freeway. Remember, Lynn's RV is right next to both.
The intent is to prevent all parking, primarily because of the unsafe conditions that exist on that street.
She also says that the land along Cato Road is zoned as industrial, which means that there could be hazardous materials there. Fremont wouldn't return my calls for this story. When the news broke about this so-called boulder policy, the outcry against it was loud and immediate. Online groups began posting, and people showed up at city council meetings to protest. Here's Fremont resident Denise Boland.
We say, well, we put the boulders there to keep people safe. But that's not the truth. The truth is we moved people before we had a solution.
For many, the city's response symbolizes a struggle with its collective conscience. Like in 2016, Fremont voted to sign something called the Compassionate Cities Charter. Among other things, the charter calls for the city to treat every human being with justice, equity, and respect. The council cited it when they approved a homeless navigation center last year. But residents say it feels decidedly uncompassionate to force homeless residents of the Cato Road area out, especially when Fremont has no safe parking locations available. And then there are the boulders themselves. Fremont says boulders are cost-effective, and with a starting price tag of $2,500, that's true. But boulders act as a symbol of callousness for many community members. Using them to deter homeless leads to controversy regardless of the city. It happened in Los Angeles.
Tonight, a battle against homeless camps in the LA neighborhood of Angelino Heights.
In Portland.
It's been an ongoing battle in the Goose Hollow neighborhood.
And most recently in San Francisco by anonymous citizens.
There is no end in sight for the battle of large boulders in one San Francisco neighborhood.
So in response to this reaction, Fremont put out a press release. It turns out the city is moving forward in phases, and Lynn's area is phase two, which means she has some extra time before she's forced to move. I want to catch her before she leaves, so I go back to visit Lynn the following week. When I see her this time, she has the attitude and countenance of a resistance fighter. The phase one boulders are already in place in a section near where she lives. My first thought is that I'm not even sure I'd call them boulders.
Those are little tiny rocks. I mean, you could just roll them out of the way.
She shows me what she's been up to, making protest signs. Five or six of them are sitting around her little front yard area. They're lettered in bright blue and white, painted on big pieces of cardboard. The one she's just finishing says, "Love your neighbor, Tesla."
If they can hang it fine, I can do it fine.
She hangs them from the same big blinking sign that's telling them to move. She says they keep getting taken down, but she keeps putting them back up. Even though it's the city of Fremont requiring them to leave, Lynn still places much of the blame on Tesla. She says employees sometimes watch her while she hangs her signs. Tesla also did not return my request for comment. Lynn puts the final touches on her sign, and I follow her as she goes to hang it on the electronic traffic sign. As we walk, a car honks from the freeway.
Oh, and people honk when they drive by.
What do you think that means?
Hello? We hear you?
We hear you.
Yeah.
Here's the sign.
Yep. Poke two holes in the top and string it from the bottom of their sign.
Okay.
Lynn reaches into her pocket.
When you don't have a lot of money, use anything you can for, like, rubber bands or...
After she strings it up, we step back to take in her handiwork.
What do you think?
I wish it was bigger.
How big would you make it?
Same size as this, as theirs.
How does it make you feel to see this hung up there?
A little better, because then I'm not just a pansy.
For now, Lynn says she'll comply with whatever orders the city gives, but she'll continue doing what she can to be heard.
I stand resolute. I have to say something back to them.
As we turn to walk back to her RV, Lynn looks defiant, but I can see the weight of this daily struggle play across her face. For now, Lynn is still parking along Cato Road. Fremont changed its position shortly after the backlash and is holding off on placing more boulders. The council plans to look at safe parking sites in the city before moving forward. The effects of Phase 1 are currently under review. In Fremont, I'm Christopher Agusa for Cross Currents.
Christopher is a fellow in the KELW Audio Academy program. Now, since he reported that story, so much has happened in the last few weeks with the coronavirus and the unhoused population. We reached out to Lynn recently by phone to see how she's doing. She's still parked on Cato Road and says she hasn't heard from the city since the shelter-in-place orders began. She's since lost her job as a painter's assistant, but says she's all stocked up on food and supplies. You're listening to Cross Currents from KALW News. I'm Hannah Baba.
My days have grown so lonely.
It's been nearly a month since the Bay Area's been staying home. At times, it can be frustrating for various reasons, including sexually. Some singles are struggling through a long, dry spell. They're refraining from physical intimacy to prevent getting infected with the coronavirus. KELW's Janae Darden reports on how singles are finding ways to cope without touch during the shutdown. And just to warn you, this story is not suitable for children.
After having observed your behavior this evening, I was wondering if you would like to have sex.
This is a scene from the 90s sci-fi action film Demolition Man. The year is 2032, but Sylvester Stallone plays a cop from the past. Sandra Bullock gives him a head device for virtual sex, then sits far across from him.
All right, obviously, what do you say we just do it the old-fashioned way?
Ew, disgusting. The rampant exchange of bodily fluids was one of the major reasons for the downfall of society. After AIDS, there was NRS. After NRS, there was UBT.
And in 2020, we have COVID-19, where some people aren't doing it the old-fashioned way. Social distancing means keeping all parts of you at least 6 feet away, which is tough when you're sheltering in place solo. Kim Carter is someone who relates to this. She's divorced and lives in her Sacramento apartment with her two adorable cats. Kim misses her pre-pandemic sex life.
I haven't had so much as a handshake in 3 weeks, and that's been really hard for me because I'm somebody who thrives off of touch and affection.
Kim tells me she is in her early 40s and her sexual prime. She dates and has a lover, but doesn't want to risk her health inviting him over.
There is no solution to this. We have to stay away from people, and so there's no way I can touch another person.
Or even kiss, because the virus is found in saliva and mucus. That's according to a sex guide from the New York City Health Department. It says while COVID-19 so far hasn't been found in vaginal and semen fluids, it has been detected in feces. And the health department recommends you stick to having sex with the partner or partners who live with you. But they say your safest sex partner is yourself, with clean hands. That's right, masturbation.
I can say in the bedroom, I've been taking care of business with my vibrator, and, you know, that's great, but it's not the same.
People in Kim's situation are reaching in their sex toy chest for satisfaction. Manufacturers have seen significant increases in online sales. Mario Crippen works at an Amazon warehouse in the Detroit area, where a few workers tested positive for the coronavirus. During a protest for safer work conditions, he tells WXYZ News about how he's been packaging lots of orders for sex toys, and he's not happy about it.
Dildos are not essential items. Books for kids, yes, but dildos? No.
Some on social media take issue with Mario's moratorium stance on dildo sales.
Sexual needs are important. It's a psychological effect to be deprived at this time.
People are cooped up inside. They need to relieve stress somehow, you know?
If I order it from Amazon, you best believe it's essential.
I mean, people have to do something if you want them to stay at home.
We can't get meat, so we'll grind on the plastic.
Carol Queen agrees.
I don't know why they didn't think we were an essential business. I do.
Carol is a staff sexologist for the sex store Good Vibrations. She says they've also seen an uptick in toys and hear about people being sexually frustrated. I ask her, why is sex on our minds during a crisis?
I think there's the, wow, this is all scary. What might make me feel better? And also, there's the, hey, I've got all this time to myself. How am I going to move through this time? And that's another reason to think about sex, or at least masturbation.
But she says people still want connection, which is happening virtually. People are hosting sex parties on Zoom, having phone sex with others they meet on dating apps or with long-distance lovers, and they're getting kinky with video calls. Kim Carter says that using these digital platforms to connect with her lover does make a difference.
Sometimes we send some X-rated stuff because we can't be with each other and be X-rated. So it's just to keep spirits up and let them know I'm thinking of them, and I get the same in return.
Carol says there's high-tech sex toys and apps that can make the connection even stronger.
You and your partner across town or in the next room or, you know, across the country can use an app-mediated toy so that your partner can turn up the buzz for you. I'll always think of you inside of my private
thoughts. Can't imagine you touching my private thoughts. Sure, the toys and apps help when you're turned on, but Kim reminds me that in times like this, you also want another form of intimacy.
If I had my druthers, I would be hugging somebody through this, you know? Somebody would be hugging me and rubbing my back and telling me it's okay, and I don't have that. I have nothing. I live alone, and, you know, I've got two cats, and they're cute and everything, but, like, that's not the kind of affection I need.
Carol Queen says Kim's yearning for physical touch makes sense given the pandemic.
You know, we're worried about each other, we're nervous about ourselves, and including real respect for erotic feelings and experience is one of the ways some of us will get through this. But it does give us the feels. You know, it opens the door to our hearts sometimes, doesn't it? And some of our hearts are heavy right now.
But Carol also sees this as an opportunity for growth and to learn more about our sexual selves.
There are definitely big pluses to taking a little bit of your quarantine time and figure out who you are on that intimate level. It's okay to have pleasure, even in a time that's scary.
Kim and I are wrapping up our call. She wants to make a drink before joining an online happy hour. She's still connecting with people. Her friend hooked her up on a virtual blind date.
She said, there's this guy I've always thought that you two would make a good couple. Since we have so much time on our hands, can I give him your number so you guys can get to know each other? And I said, sure.
And Kim has one final thought.
But it is hard being alone, so don't forget about your friends that are single and alone. They need love, too.
In the meantime, until it's safe for us to touch new people with consent, singles like Kim will have to keep buzzing along. In Oakland, and single, too, I'm Janae Darden for Cross Currents.
That's KALW's East Oakland reporter, Janae Darden. Find more of her reporting at KALW.org. Feeling myself, I'm feeling myself, I'm feeling myself, feeling myself. I'm feeling myself, 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 I'm feeling myself. Change the game when that digital drop. Know where you was when that digital pop. I stopped the world. Male or female, it make no difference. I stopped the world. World stop. Carry on. This is Cross Currents. I'm Henat Baba. The shelter-in-place order is helping people flatten the coronavirus curve, but it means people not going to see movies, live sports, music shows, and for the literary crowd, book readings. Countless Bay Area authors with spring book release dates have had to cancel their launch parties and their book tours. So we're bringing the readings to you in this series we're calling New Arrivals. Today, Berkeley's Bonnie Tsui reads from her book called Why We Swim, which comes out today.
This is one of my favorite parts of the book. It has to do with how I first fell in love with the water. I felt the draw of liquid early on, that slide into lovely immersion, that spiraling weightlessness, that privileged access to a muted underworld. Entry was granted to me there at Jones Beach, where we passed the hours within shouting distance of our mom's blue-flowered beach towels. In between swims, we gave each other wedgies and buried ourselves in the sand. I liked how the ocean seemed to draw breath, lying placid one moment and rearing up the next, moving us in one rippling mass to and from the horizon. Once, a big wave came and smacked me from behind, surprise overturning ass over a tea kettle. Then, a liquid green room clouded by sand. Me, swimming and swimming toward nothing. Which way is up? 4 feet isn't very much water, but it's deep enough to drown in. Time stretched. Time restarted with an accidental kick to the head from my cousin swimming not 2 feet away. Gifted this reference point, I scrambled to the surface, my hair wrapped around my face like kelp. Embarrassed and gasping, I looked around. When I realized that no one had noticed I was in trouble, I pretended that I never was, and I turned right back into the sea.
That's author Bonnie Tsui from Berkeley reading from her book called Why We Swim, and it comes out today. You can find more information on that book and others by local authors released this spring at klw.org/newarrivals. Today's team includes Precious Green, Lisa Morehouse, True Quinn, Marissa Ortega-Welch, and Sarah Lai Sterland. Our engineers are James Rollins, Tariq Foda, and Gabe Graben. Content manager is Shireen Adil. Our managing editor is David Boyer. Deputy news director is Angela Johnston. News director is Ben Trefney. Our opening theme music is by the John Santos Quintet, as interpreted by Dawood Anthony. For Cross Currents, I'm Henat Baba.